Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Federal Reserve surprising everyone, to my understanding, by making the decision to lower the cost of money a half a point when the market and everyone else, the punditocracy, was expecting a quarter point. I take this mystery to Joseph Sternberg, my colleague. He's a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's in London. And his most recent column is about the Federal Reserve and its decision-making, especially when it comes to dissent. Joe, a very good evening to you. The record of dissent that you've published for us in your most recent column suggests there's not much the Federal Reserve. Is that a good thing, Joe? Good evening to you.
Hey, John, I think it's actually a pretty bad thing. So we're talking about this because, as you mentioned, the Federal Reserve, or more precisely, the Federal Open Market Committee, which is the policy-making body within the Fed, last week surprised everyone when it reduced short-term interest rate by half a percentage point. This was a big decision. It was kind of surprising and a little bit puzzling because there's a lot of ambiguity about the economic data that the Fed might or might not have been responding to. But the other news item that emerged from this is that there was a dissenting vote. Michelle Bowman, who's a member of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, there are seven of these governors, including the chairman, Jerome Powell, voted against the decision because she only wanted to cut interest rates by a quarter percentage point instead of the half. And there was a lot of attention to this because this is actually a pretty rare phenomenon that a member of the governor of the Board of Governors would vote against a policy decision. The last time it happened was 19 years ago in September of 2005. And this is strange for a few reasons, I think. One of which is that there just isn't more dissent in general. Because it's such an uncertain economic environment. I mean, clearly they don't agree with each other. If you look at the speeches that they delivered before the meeting, when they all go out on the speaking circuit or other statements that they've made. So you can imagine that there was a big debate in the conference room, and yet somehow they all managed to agree. And then also somehow they've all managed to agree with each other for the past 20 years. There is dissent on the Federal Open Market Committee, often from the presidents of the regional reserve banks who get to take turns voting on the Open Market Committee. But the seven member Board of Governors is basically unanimous all the time. And we've become so used to this that we forget how strange it is that somehow they always manage to agree with each other at the end of these meetings. That can't be healthy.
I note that you've provided us a frame for this to talk about dissent, the Arthur Burns to Paul Volcker era. Then I believe it would be the Alan Greenspan to Ben Bernanke or beyond that. So we're looking at different approaches to the FOMC to dissent, or are we? Is there uniformity in these eras, or do they have differences of opinion that are voiced depending upon, I don't know, the media reporting or dissenters speaking out of turn? Is there a way you can break it down, Joe?
Well, I think one of the things that's really unusual about this current environment of dissent, and again, we should remember that several of the regional reserve bank presidents get a vote on the Federal Open Market Committee every year. And those regional presidents do tend to dissent from decisions more often, although usually only one or two at a time in recent years. And this is historically anomalous because the last time that you had a period when there was a lot of uncertainty about the economy, people were realizing that a lot of the old economic theories and models and ways of thinking about the economy were breaking down. There was a lot of debate and uncertainty about what direction monetary policy should take in response. That was in the 70s and early 80s, primarily the Burns and Volcker eras. And that became a golden age for dissent on the Federal Open Market Committee. You could have meetings where three, four, sometimes even, five voting members up to four voting members would vote against a policy decision. And that was a sign that there was healthy debate that was going on, and people really had taken the time to develop opinions that they believed very strongly in, and they thought that they owed it to the public to vote that way when it did come to a vote. And you had a bit more dissent in the Bernanke era, when you also had a lot of experimentation with quantitative easing and trying to figure out how to recover from the housing crash and the financial panic and the Great Recession. But again, most of the dissent in that era, when you might have two or possibly three votes against, all that was coming from the regional Fed presidents. It wasn't coming from the Board of Governors. And so I think that, we do still have this mechanism for bringing in contrary views, because we do bring in these regional bank presidents who get a turn at policymaking. But somehow, when it comes to appointing members of the Board of Governors, which is something that the president does with advice and consent from the Senate, somehow they always seem to pick people who end up agreeing with each other.
The most recent decision by the Federal Reserve, the lowering of interest rates by a half a point, there's got to be dissent there, Joe, because I've heard nothing but dissent on Bloomberg TV from people saying they went too much too fast unless they see something we don't see. Do you see anywhere, Joe, I can read about why it is they went from a quarter point to one week to a half point the next? Is there some crystal ball they have that we don't know about?
Well, I mean, this is one of the great mysteries, because if you looked at the economic data that they were working with, the picture is actually reasonably good. I mean, economic growth could be stronger, but we're not in a recession. The labor market isn't great, but it's also not terrible. I mean, the 4.4% unemployment rate is not high by historical standards. So it was difficult to discern why the Fed was talking about the economy as a good news story and yet setting policy as if there is a problem. And this is one reason why I think it becomes important to think about the level of dissent in some of this decision making. Clearly, there is a lot of uncertainty and a lot of confusion, and the Fed is feeling its way as they go along. And so, shouldn't we expect that there is going to be a more public record of the disagreement and the contours of that discussion? I mean, we get the speeches that the individual governors give when they're out on the speaking trail between meetings, which suggests that there might be some debate going on and some differences of opinion. But when it counts, when there is the most public visibility and accountability, for their views, somehow that all seems to melt away. And so there's this odd dissonance between the complexity and the uncertainty of the economic environment and the unanimity of a lot of these policy votes.
The surprise was the half point before the election, because there is a whispering campaign, it's not very loud yet, that this was a partisan decision. I don't follow that logic. I just mention it's a whispering campaign. But available to the Fed was the quarter point that was long signaled, and then if half point needed after the election. And another thing about Jerome Powell that I've learned these last years is that he is very good about signaling where they're going long before they go there, so that there's a calm to his press conferences afterwards when he gets to say, "I told you what I was going to do. We just did it." And this was a discontinuous to that, or do you measure that, Joe?
Well, I think that they had been signaling that a half percentage point rate cut might be in the works, which is why markets were a bit surprised by it, but not as surprised if it had come as a bolt out of the blue. But I think that this political point is really important. And this also goes back to the dissent issue that we've been talking about, because, I mean, the Fed has raised rates and they have cut rates in election years before. And I do not for a minute believe that Jerome Powell is trying to meddle in the election. I think that they are genuinely trying to do what they think is the right economic policy. But the problem is that there is what is going on, and then there is the public perception. And the perception matters a lot in politics and in economics. And I think that it would probably help from that perception standpoint a bit if the public could have more insight into this decision-making process and who agrees and who disagrees with it.
When they publish their notes afterwards, long afterwards, I don't know, it's a month, 6 weeks later, do we get anything from that that we don't get from dissent? In other words, are people willing to go along? They talk tough, but then they go with the flow. Is that what's happening?
Well, I think that you can often get a flavor of some of the discussion. What we're talking about here are the minutes that get released after in a decent interval after the meeting is over. But I think that the problem with that, first off, is that the Fed staff and the chairman can exercise a certain amount of influence over the shape of the minutes. I mean, they will never write anything that is untrue in there, but you have to make decisions as anyone who's ever been the secretary for a volunteer committee will tell you. You have to make decisions when you're preparing meeting minutes about what points you want to emphasize and what elements you want to perhaps de-emphasize a little bit because you think that they're less important. And so, the meeting minutes can give you a flavor of what the discussion was like, but again, it's not the same as having a proper roll call vote where people might formally disagree with the decision for whatever reason and go on the record in that way. Because that's just not the function of meeting minutes. That's why you're supposed to have committee votes.
Joseph Sternberg is a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal and my guide on the Federal Reserve now that he's raised this issue of dissent. We'll look forward to that because there are risks in 2025 that apparently were always expected in 2024. That's the word recession. We're going to turn now to life in London, where Joe lives, because there's a new government and there's a lot of wit in the new government, some of it inadvertent. Labour in command when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At WashableSofas.com, you'll find the Anabe Sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.